Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Joining us on the line from the Oil Price Information Service, Denton Cinquegrana is joining us to talk about gas prices. It's on the top of everyone's mind, Denton, and it's something the president was talking about yesterday. He's proposing suspension of the federal gas tax for 3 months. Now, we've heard this before. Happened here on a state level, on a local county level, too. And we're still paying more than when these things passed. What do you think about this plan on a federal level?
Well, first of all, good morning, Brian. Good morning, Susan. Good to talk to you guys again. Really, from a consumer standpoint, it's an immediate help, right? So prices will drop 18.4 cents. And if they suspended the diesel tax, that's 24 cents. So there's going to be an immediate impact seen on prices. That's going to help consumers. But it does nothing for supply, which is what we need right now. We're really kind of tight. I mean, we're getting by, but it's a very much hand-to-mouth situation.
You seem to think that if they approve the gas tax suspension, that the consumer would see an 18% reduction. But a lot of people, especially members of Congress, don't think that that would be the case. They don't think it would be passed on, that the oil companies would keep that. How could that happen?
I find that hard to believe, because you have to have all of your tax documents in order. I think that's just kind of fear mongering, quite honestly. It would, you know, we've seen it with the state level tax breaks, whether it was New York, whether it's Georgia, whether it's Maryland, wherever they've happened, and before Connecticut. You know, it's all in the paperwork.
This plan, I mean, it would seem to do the opposite of what you want to do, right? You would try to make demand less, increase supply, and that would, you know, at least on an elementary level, which is where my brain works, I mean, reduce the price. That's how it's supposed to work, right? But this, I mean, would kind of, I guess, stimulate demand a little bit by having more people feel free to go and buy gas if it's a little bit cheaper. And there's nothing really to increase the supply.
And Brian, that's just it. I mean, that's the real concern here, is that you have a situation where you drop the price, but demand either stays steady or even goes up a little bit, when you really kind of need a little bit of demand destruction, a little bit less driving out there. And I know that's easier said than done, but that'll give supply a chance to catch up. Right now, refiners are running about, as I know, you know, the president, the Secretary of Energy have just panned the refiners, but they're running at, you know, 95% of capacity right now. So they could squeeze out a little bit more, but not much more than that.
You know, that's what I want to get to. It seems like there's so much misinformation, or you hear doublespeak. Depending on who you talk to, you hear that refineries are running at close or to full capacity, or you hear that refinery capacity in oil production has declined in the U.S. That was from Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen over the weekend. So which is it?
It's both, actually. Over the past several years, and you really have to go back to the pandemic. So we saw several refineries close, even before that. In 2019, there was a fire at a refinery in Philadelphia, which was actually a big supplier of diesel to a lot of the East Coast markets. That refinery was never repaired. In fact, that land has been sold off, and it's being redeveloped. Meanwhile, you have the pandemic come through in 2020. You have, you know, refiners are losing money by making gasoline and making jet fuel, and, you know, to a lesser extent, diesel. So refineries closed down. One refinery in Louisiana was damaged by Hurricane Ida. I think there was like 12 feet of salt water within the refinery. That's obviously not a good thing. And the cost to repair would have been too great, so they decided to close that refinery down. There's not much that can be done from a refining capacity standpoint, adding capacity right now. There's one refinery in St. Croix called Lime Tree Bay, and the EPA revoked their permit to operate. I think that's one thing that the administration is not talking about that would probably help. You have a ready, willing, and able workforce down there who's ready to work, obviously, and that a refinery like that would provide some of the middle distillates, the jet fuel, the diesel, to some of those Latin American and Caribbean markets, probably reduce some of the exports from the United States, but also supply some of the Southeast, like Florida, from that refinery. So that's one area that they probably should be taking a look at, and I just don't know if they are.
Yeah, that's interesting. I was just going to ask you, there's this meeting today, the president, the heads of some of these oil companies. The president has sent a letter, and you know, his public statement is that he's going to tell them, hey, just lower the price, please. And you're making too much money off of this. If you are in the other seat across the table from that, what is your retort to that? What do you say that you need from the White House to be able to lower that price?
Right. I think what they need is, you know, not necessarily assurances, but say, hey, what's the long-term vision here? Because we need to not plan for tomorrow. We need to plan for 5 years out from now. So if you're telling us we don't have a place at the table 5 years from now, then why should we even bother? I mean, even though you said please and ask nicely.
You know, we keep hearing the Keystone Pipeline being brought up. If it wasn't shut down, Denton, would it be a different situation today?
You know, that's the question I get all the time about Keystone. There is a Keystone Pipeline. There's a Keystone Pipeline that's running. It's moving about 800,000 barrels a day of Canadian crude oil down into the Midwest and then down into the Gulf Coast. The Keystone XL that everyone loves to talk about was just a, for lack of a better term, a shortcut. Instead of going to the Midwest, it would go to Steel City, Nebraska, and then down into Cushing, Oklahoma. The Keystone XL is just a political talking point.
What would not be? You mentioned there's not that many opportunities for increasing capacity. If that's true, if there's really limited availability for, you know, stimulating production, I mean, what's the option that's on the table? Or are we just going to live with high prices forever?
Well, I think we're going to end up living with high prices, not forever. Forever is a long time, Brian. But you know, we're going to be living with high prices for a while here. But you know, there are a few options. But again, for each option, there's always a trade-off, right? So last week there was talk about an export ban. Well, if you ban exports, the pipelines that run from Houston all the way up to New Jersey and Houston up into the Midwest markets, they're pretty full. So you can't really add much more. So if you ban exports, all of a sudden you have this product backing up into the Gulf Coast market, and refiners say, well, the pipelines are at full capacity, my storage tanks are filling up, I have to cut back now because I have no place to put it. At the same time, there's a piece of maritime legislation called the Jones Act. This says that any ship moving from one U.S. port to the next, another U.S. port, say from Houston to Port Canaveral, Florida, for example, it has to be on a U.S.-built, U.S. crude, and U.S. flagged ship. Jones Act vessels are much more expensive than internationally flagged vessels, just because there's more internationally flagged vessels than Jones Act. If the administration would waive the Jones Act, and they have done it before during hurricanes and things like that, that would help reduce prices and help make products move. Maybe instead of exporting some of that fuel, it would come around Florida and into the East Coast markets. Another option, and again, so you have trade-offs here, right? You know, I think part of the Jones Act is, you know, there's national security involved, but also, you know, and I outlined what would potentially happen with an export ban. Another one is they can waive kind of summer grade or make, you know, in markets where, like me here in New Jersey, we use reformulated gasoline. If we could just use conventional gasoline, that could probably add another 500,000 barrels a day of production. But your trade-off is poorer air quality in a lot of the cities around the country that would use that reformulated gasoline during this time of year.
Hey, Denton, we appreciate the time, as always, and your insight onto this. Denton Sinkegrana with the Oil Price Information Service joining us live.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL Draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.